Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our very special guest is Brennan Dunn, co-founder of RightMessage and also super famous for Double Your Freelancing brand. And today we're going to talk about website personalization. This episode is brought to you by UserList.io, a new tool for sending event-based email to your SaaS users. Overwhelmed with existing automation tools? Try this simple solution for converting free trials, user onboarding, and promoting specific features in your web application. To learn more, join the waiting list at UserList.io. Hey, Brennan.
Hey, Jane, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for taking the time for us today.
Always a pleasure talking with you. So glad to be here.
We're going to start with a short blitz questionnaire and then continue with the main topic. How does that sound?
Sounds great. Yeah.
Fantastic. Question number one is, what do you do for a living?
Well, two things. I have two revenue streams, one of which is RightMessage, which isn't much because I'm actually reinvesting most of the revenue from that business back into the business. And the other that actually pays my bills currently is Double Your Freelancing, which that revenue comes mostly through course sales.
What is your background story? How did you get there?
So, well, kind of a long journey. I started an agency back in 2008. And then that did fairly well. We got it up to a little over 10 employees. But then I got wind of people like Amy Hoy, and I really wanted to get into software. So I got out of the agency to start a software company called PlanScope, which you actually helped me out with. And that did okay. Never did fantastic. But one thing I got from that was, in order to get people to find out about the software, I had to write about all things related to freelancing, since it was targeting freelancers. So I started writing about marketing and sales and so on for freelancers. And that led to what became Double Your Freelancing. And in 2016, I sold PlanScope to go full-time on Double Your Freelancing. And in growing Double Your Freelancing, I started to personalize the website based off of, you know, what kind of work somebody does, how big their team is, or are they a solo or a team, how experienced they are, and so on. And that worked well. So that led me to partner up with Shai to start RightMessage as a result of a lot of the data we've, or a lot of the things, I guess, that we learned personalizing Double Your Freelancing.
Great. So one thing outgrew the other and another and the other.
Correct. None of it was pre. I didn't sit back in 2008 and mapped all this out. It was all kind of reacting to what I was learning along the way.
What does your typical day look like?
These days, it's been a little crazy because I am, in a weird way, running two companies. So Double Your Freelancing is mostly hands-off, but I still have obligations. Like, we have a podcast and I have some courses I'm working on. So it's been it has not been sustainable. I've been working long hours, but it's exciting because with the startup with RightMessage, we're now at 11 people on the team. And it's growing really quickly, and it's exciting because we're just doing a lot with, like, I'm doing sales calls all day, and I'm in my CRM following up with past people I've demoed it to and trying to get them to buy, and then I'm partnering up with people for joint venture webinars. So it's exhilarating. It's a lot of time, but it's really fun, and I'm enjoying it. So the best way of putting it to answer your question would be, long, long days, but I love it. So,
what do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
The most would be that there's so many different things. I mean, that we as business owners can do that can help us grow our businesses, and it's a bit like, you know, we have all these different levers we can pull, and this lever might get more subscribers, and this lever might get more customers, and this one might make customer values even higher, and so on. And I love just the opportunity, like all these different things we can do that stack up into something much bigger. The thing I don't like is exactly that too, which is I'm always being, you know, should I do this? Should I do that? And that can get a little tiring over time to be able to think, like, there's all these things I need to be doing. My task list is never actually done. there's always more that I should and could be doing. So that can be a little, if you don't kind of control yourself, that can be a little overwhelming.
You should have, you know, get used to that by now, running so many businesses. There is never an end to a to-do list for a founder, really.
I wish I was better at that. I'm very bad. Well, I'm good at times with work-life balance, but then when I get really excited about a new project, I let it all kind of go to waste.
What is your next big thing?
I mean, I think I'm definitely focusing now full-time on Right Message. And it's, I mean, just, we have a lot we're planning on doing with it to make personalization even more accessible to people. So, but the interesting thing about this product is I'm more coordinating things. I'm not doing everything. So now that we have a decent team, you know, it's interesting kind of planning and thinking, well, what should we be doing next? And then coordinating that with the development team to build that and plan it and so on. So, I mean, the next big thing I think for me at least is just, you know, how do we make this a, you know, our next milestone is $1 million a year in revenue. So how do we get there and what's it going to take to get there? So, you know, me just focusing on what do we do to get there? So that's kind of that's my current focus right now.
Side question. What does your team look like? How do you structure it? Are there 10 designers, 10 developers, 10 salespeople? Who is the priority?
No. Yeah. So we have myself, who's I'm CEO and head of kind of all things sales and marketing. And then we have Shai, who's head of product, who's also a co-founder. And then we have two other developers, soon three. So there's three currently on the development team, soon four. And then we have a full-time support person. We have a guy who helps me with sales, but also with operations and finance. And then we also have two people on the growth team who are helping me with all things, just, you know, marketing and sales and so on. But then we have a few contractors. We have a part-time designer. We have a part-time front-end person who helps us implement the Photoshop designs into markup. And I think we have, I don't know, I've lost count with how many I just listed, but it's total 11, some of them full-time, some contractors.
Fantastic. By the way, Laura has been doing an amazing job on the designs, if that's all her.
It is. She's done both the product and the marketing site. And I really like how it's coming out. It's nice because it's not kind of that typical kind of like corporate blue look that a lot of these, you know, software companies have. It's got like pink and all these colors that a lot of us were a little uncomfortable with, to be honest. But I think we're really starting to like them and it's really working out well, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah. Let's go back to personalization. So we had an episode with Samuel Hulick just a while ago, and it sounded like a prequel to your interview, because definitely website personalization is more accessible and kind of comes first as a marketing powerful weapon. So for you, how did you arrive at that concept? And I don't know, what does that mean for you with personalization?
So it actually started in 2004. With me, where I was, my first company, I was generating mortgage leads, and I used to take into account where somebody lived, and then I would kind of personalize a landing page to speak more directly to them. And that was all, I didn't know anything about the terminology or anything like that, but I got kind of comfortable with the idea of maximizing, in this case, conversions, you know, leads being generated using personalization. Where it really came into being for me was when I started to build up WR Freelancing. And when I started it, it was kind of people like myself. It was mostly developers and some designers who had heard about like my courses and they would go and sign up and so on. But then it started to expand. And I remember I got an email from a copywriter who was asking about WR Freelancing rate, and she'd heard good things, but she's a copywriter. All the testimonials were developers and designers. And she questioned, could this actually help me? So I was able to actually get her to buy over email by saying, look, it's not actually specific to any of these things. These are just the people that I have case studies from, right? But I realized how many other people thought that. You know, it's not a specific, it's not specific to any type of freelancer, but how many other people thought, hey, this isn't like niched enough for me. This isn't positioned strongly enough for me. Maybe this can't help me. So they would leave. So I just thought, well, what if I can find out if this person, what kind of person work somebody does, and then make it so if they're a copywriter, they see testimonials from other copywriters and maybe change the headline to be about copywriting and so on. And I just started doing this kind of with custom code on W Freelancing, and it started to work really well. So, you know, I started with that, and then I would do things like if they're already on my list, don't show an opt-in any longer. Instead, maybe point them to the course. And if they buy that course, maybe point them to like the upsell or something like that. And that's where it started, just doing things like that. But over, you know, the last few years, it's gotten a lot more complex. But with that complexity, I've seen conversions go up very significantly, just put it that way. So, I mean, we've had effectively an increase of 70% in terms of overall revenue that are tied specifically to the personalization work that's been done over the last few year and a half or 2 years. So, yeah, I mean, it's been personalization for me to answer kind of the other part of that question is really just saying everyone's different. You have a product or a service, and this product or service is needed for different reasons. And the people who might buy that product or service have different outlooks. They have different language they use. If we could make it so we can position what it is we're selling on the fly to match who somebody is and what they want, then we're better able to describe the product. It's like if I'm at MicroConf and somebody asks me what I do, the way I describe my company is going to be different than if I'm at a design conference and somebody also asks me what I do. You know, the way we describe our businesses changes depending on who we're speaking with. So why not do the same online for our products or services?
Absolutely. And the classic art of sales page says that you can never make a sales page vague to fit everybody. So you should focus. But what if your business targets several groups of people? And that's exactly where it comes in handy.
Correct. And that's exactly it. And I mean, people, there's a lot of value in going all in on a particular niche, right? And saying, I'm going to have a very strongly positioned business or product that serves, you know, like the example I like to give is ConvertKit, right? Like they went all in on bloggers. So that worked really well for them. But what if you could say, you know, ConvertKit is the best tool for fitness bloggers, and then ConvertKit's the best tool for, you know, diet bloggers or something, right? Or, you know, all the different kinds of blogging communities there are. Well, they're probably not going to go all in and build a whole marketing website just for fitness bloggers. So what if we could just change different elements if somebody on our website is a fitness blogger versus somebody who's a, you know, weight loss blogger versus somebody who's a, you know, all these different types of potential bloggers, right?
Let's go into technicalities. Does that usually affect just the sales pages to improve conversion? So that's like the conversion rate optimization industry, or can you go as far and as hard as, I don't know, changing the structure of the site, doing something else to fit the audience?
So what we've been seeing, because so we're starting to collect a lot of data about what's working and what isn't working. Headline changes are often enough to get a pretty immediate bump, meaning if you're on a sales page and you change the headline to be more focused on who this person is and what they might want, that's usually that alone is often enough to have a pretty big dent. Because if you know the goal of a headline is to get somebody to continue reading, that gets more people reading if they think, oh wow, you know, this person, this company gets me. So content and copy changes are pretty much what most people are doing. However, we've seen, I just looked at one person's account who they did something that in my mind was relatively kind of simple and silly, but they made it so that if you're anonymous, they eliminated all the distractions from their navigation, from, you know, everywhere on the page, and really focused in on just getting you to do one thing, which is to become a subscriber. And they were able to see a lift of, I think, like 70 or 80% pretty immediately just by doing that, just by eliminating, you know, competing call to actions, right? So structurally, yes, you can make changes in terms of you know, eliminating things that don't apply to somebody, or really focus, getting them to take that next step based on what you know about where, you know, who they are and where they are in your overall sales funnel. So yeah, I mean, the typical thing people do is content changes, but we're also seeing people who are doing structural changes. I mean, I do structural changes on WR Freelancing where the primary navigation element changes depending on where you are in my sales funnel.
Sounds great. So technically speaking, when people arrive to the same URL, they see different things, and that's what you do with right message and personalization.
Correct, yes. So what we do, to get kind of technical about how we do it, so it's JavaScript-based, meaning we don't actually live on like your server or anything like that. So it happens, it post-processes the page, right? And then what we're doing in real time is the way we look at things is if you opt into a form or you click a link from an email service provider that goes back to your website, in that link or during that opt-in, you're basically authenticating yourself. So tools like Drip, when you click a link that Drip sent you, in that link is your subscriber ID. So then what we do is we remember that, and then we use Drip's API so that when you're on a website that we power, we're going to look up and say, what tags, what custom fields does this person have? And then we're able to then do things based off that. So are they a customer? If yes, maybe hide the purchase button and make it this instead. So behind, that's technically what we're doing. We're also doing things for if we don't know who you are, meaning you're anonymous, we're looking at what website did you come from? And then, or what pages have you visited? Or what ad did you click on? So we look at the UTM parameters that might come over. And we remember that. And then we use that as a way of profiling somebody. So we can say, like, if Jane, if UIbreakfast.com sends me traffic, I can assume that that audience is probably, you know, potentially designers. It's not guaranteed, but it's a good kind of assumption to make, right? So that's basically what we're doing is we're letting people be able to say if any of these conditions are true. If they came from this website, if they clicked on this ad, if they viewed these pages, or if they landed on this page from Google, or if they have this data in their email marketing app, then we can put them into segments, and then we can do things based off if they're present in a segment.
I have a question. When you designed this method for right message, was it like revolutionary new, or was it based on your previous experience with what you did with your previous businesses, or like other technologies that do similar things but in a different manner?
I mean, Optimizely, for instance, a lot of the A/B testing tools now have personalization tools, but most of them do what we do top of funnel, meaning they will let you do things on who referred this person to our website, or what UTM parameters they have, or something like that. Where we go further, which I don't really see many people doing, even though all these email marketing apps have APIs, is making it so we can change parts of our website if we know certain things about somebody. So if you treat your email marketing app as kind of like a user's database, right, of all your different users, you can query that and you can read and write data from that. So we can say things like, you know, are they a subscriber? If yes, hide the opt-in form. But if they're a subscriber and they're a customer, meaning they're tagged customer, then maybe instead of the opt-in form, put the, I don't know, coaching link or, you know, coaching call to action in there or something like that, right? So in terms of where that came from, when I was doing this myself on WR Freelancing before Right Message, it was just a lot of custom code. Now, fortunately, Drip made this really easy for us because they, out of the box, give you the ability to ask those sort of questions without doing a lot of complicated work. But before Drip, I was using Infusionsoft, and I actually have, I think it's WordPressConversionFunnel.com back from like 2012, where I built a little plugin, my first and last WordPress plugin ever, that did this, but it only worked with Infusionsoft. So I've been doing this to some degree for a while now. But it's now at the point where I've gotten a lot more data, which I think is what matters. And we're better able now to know how do we actually set this up and how do we help people better segment and profile people and so on.
I think it's the perfect time to share some success stories or examples from your practice where personalization got some amazing results.
So I've got a lot. That's the good thing is we've actually have a ton of data now. So we have one, for instance. So this is good timing because I just did a presentation for Drips Online Conference, and it's nothing but case studies. So there's a lot of data I have right in front of me right now. Mm-hmm. So interesting example. So let's say you have a software product or you have a course or something, and people review it and link to it. That's a pretty typical thing, right? So you might have, one of your books or courses or something, and then somebody writes a review and then links to it. What one of our customers did, they're called Bookify, is they made it so when somebody links over from a review site, it will make the headline of the homepage, which is typically where people will link to. They're not going to link to like a specific, they'll go to the homepage. They made it so the headline changes to, in this case, Capterra's highest rated scheduling software. So they're reviewed by Capterra. And then when Capterra sends some traffic, they just change the headline on their homepage. And they were able to get a 289% increase in signups from traffic from Capterra immediately just by doing that. So they went from 2.7% to 7.8% just by changing that headline, which is to me is insane. Like they changed literally an H1, a headline, and that's it. But what it did is it made it so when somebody reads the Capterra review and they go over, it kind of continues that conversation, if you will, right? So that's one data point that we're really, when we saw that, I was thinking there must be a bug in our reporting. But when we looked at the data, it was true. It's just interesting how you wouldn't think that it would have such an impact, but it does.
You just highlighted rule number one of any ad campaigns or anything like that, which is keeping the context, context between the ad and whatever the story follows. And here it goes, matched with the personalization.
You know, it's funny. So we have a lot of customers now who are doing exactly that. They have like one landing page, and then they modify the landing page based on the ad. So they don't need 50 different landing pages. They have a single landing page that just changes an image or the headline or whatever based on the ad that was clicked, the copy, right? Like, so what you just said, if the ad copy says XYZ, make the headline on the landing page XYZ, right? And the other example I have is we have a customer who did that. They generate leads for a training company, or they're a training company, and they were able to lift overall consultation requests from paid traffic from AdWords by 110% immediately just by doing exactly what you said. Make it so the headline matches the ad they clicked on, right? And before that, they were thinking, well, to do this correctly, we would need to have hundreds potentially of different landing pages that are pretty much all the same, except maybe there's different language tweaks. And that was kind of an unexpected surprise that people are using right message to achieve is exactly that. So it was cool seeing that because they were really happy because they, you know, they pay a lot for advertising. And the fact that they, by increasing consultations by 110%, that doubled the performance of their ad spend. So like, I mean, to be able to go into AdWords and double, you know, have your cost per click, that's really hard to do. So they were able to do that effectively just by making it so their landing page converted better.
That's amazing. Quick SEO question. How does that differ from having multiple landing pages targeted for each audience separately as opposed to modifying one?
Yeah, so we typically encourage people we don't affect SEO at all. So we're SEO neutral in the sense that we actually block Googlebot and all that stuff. So if you want to have like, you know, so RightMessage integrates with Drip. We have a /Drip landing page because we want people Googling for, you know, Drip personalization software to find us. So we still encourage people to build out landing pages separately, especially if SEO is kind of a big part of how you do things. But two things, one of which is if somebody Googles Drip personalization software and lands on that landing page, typically what happens is that landing page is very well done, you know, on a lot of these, you know, sites where it'll all be about Drip and so on. But when they leave that landing page, if they go to the features page or the pricing page, it typically goes back to kind of the default, right? So what we've done is we've made, like right now, if you go to rightmessage.com/Drip or /ConvertKit or /Infusionsoft, if you were to land there first and then you move around our site, you're going to see it talking, say, about Infusionsoft as you move around the site. Mm-hmm. So we use that as a signal. But for paid ads, you typically have landing pages that aren't picked up by Google, right? So for things like that, then it makes sense to have all these variations. But really, we're trying to make it so for human beings, we're making websites more relatable. We don't actually have any SEO effect. But that's a good question, because a lot of people ask that same thing. They think like maybe we can eliminate all these different things, but no. Typically, you need to think it through. Does Google send traffic, or could they send traffic to this? If so, then you're going to want a separate landing page for that.
Which raises another point. Here, you just gave an example how it reduces the amount of work for improving your ad flow. But generally speaking, how much work is that personalization as opposed to no personalization? How much work does it imply? And at what business stage does it make sense to invest into that?
I mean, I think if you're running a lot of money with paid traffic, so the customer I gave you an example of, they spend about $3,000 to $4,000 a month on ads, and so that's a good amount, right? And they spent 45 minutes in Right Message setting up and mapping each ad campaign with a segment within Right Message and then changing the copy. So they were able to get up in 45 minutes, the basics, right? Like the minimum that they needed. And that minimum got them that 110% increase. So for them, it's basically, say they're spending $3,000 a month on ads. They're now effectively getting the same results as if they were spending $6,000 a month on ads for 45 minutes of work, and that's permanent. So for them, it made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But it really depends on the thing we encourage people to do is, because a lot of people, I think, make the mistake of thinking it's like a redesign project. You need to really plan it out. You need to kind of map it all out. You need to do a lot of work before you're ready to do this. But really, if you look at how I started by just changing it. So if you're on my list, don't show the opt-in. And that was it. And then, you know, later on, I added more complexity. So I think it's like with anything. It's like with an email marketing app or something like that. You don't usually, like, you don't sign up for a product like Drip or ConvertKit or whatever, or maybe even UserList, right? And have it all day one perfect. You just do a few things and then you build on that over time. So it's comparable. It's not like a redesign project where it's all or nothing, where you need to actually redesign and plan it all out and then you push it all live in one big go. So we're encouraging people typically to start small, you know, find a thing that you can do relatively quickly, get some results, and then build from there.
Venting another concern. So you're making educated assumptions about what audience the user belongs to, and are focusing on them, but you're omitting the others. What if the assumption is wrong? How high is that risk? And if that's worth trying, you know?
So that's another really good question. One of the things we're building effectively lead scoring for segments. So we can say if they come from UI Breakfast, we can assume but not be positive that they are a designer. So we can maybe do something simple like just change out a few testimonials to make them a little more about from designers. But don't go outright and say, hey, designer, welcome to Right Message or something like that, right? So typically what I like, the issue I think with personalization is people mix it up with kind of like account-based marketing, meaning, you know, if you go to my website and it's like, hey, Jane, welcome back. How is being a designer or something like that? That can be a little creepy and it can be really inaccurate. So what we encourage people to do is not to be that explicit, but just to make subtle changes. Like for instance, you know, if I think you're a designer, you're going to see more designer testimonials. But if you're not a designer, it's not the end of the world. Like I'm not saying, hey, you're a designer or something like that. But we do have things. So there are more explicit ways. So if you opt into my email list, to my email course, I ask you what kind of work you do. And if you tell me that you're a designer through doing that, then it's probably pretty safe to assume Jane is a designer, you know? Mm-hmm. So it just depends on, you can make assumptions based off of, say, the landing page they came from via Google. Like if they land on, so one of my biggest articles that gets a lot of traffic is how to start a freelancing business. And I make an assumption that if you land there first, you're probably not an agency. Like if you end up on that page as the very first page you came from or came to, and you came there from Google, let's say, it's pretty safe to say you probably Googled something like, how do I start freelancing? So, you know, that I'm not going to go outright and say, hey, you've never freelanced before, but the call to actions are going to slightly change based off that.
So there is, you're saying there is a range of things you can do, starting with small tweaks or large tweaks if you're confident about someone.
Yeah. And for instance, if you integrate with an email marketing app, you know if somebody's on a list or not on a list. Now, granted, if they clear their cookies or go incognito or, you know, get a new computer or whatever else, you're going to lose that. But, you know, the majority of people are going to, you know, it's probably fine. So, you know, typically what we say is like, if they click on an email you just sent them and that email can authenticate them. So let's say like the typical model is you have a blog and you email your blog or your newest articles to your list, right? So your blog has an opt-in, people opt into your newsletter. And then when you write new content, you email that out to your list. That's a pretty typical model that a lot of bloggers have. Well, if I get an email from you and you're announcing this new article you just wrote, and then I click that link that includes identifying information about me and I go to your site, don't ask me for an opt-in, right? Like that's really safe. I mean, there's really no, unless they're using like if they're blocking the API call through their browser, then they, you know, there's really zero chance that it's going to be incorrect, right? Because we know this is a subscriber. This is her email address. These are the tags about what she's bought. And we can do things based off that.
Absolutely. We arrived at another sensitive topic, which is privacy and GDPR, of course. And I saw your tweet yesterday saying that you're compliant and you had a lawyer for that and that it's not a concern for your business. Tell us more about it.
Yeah. So the software is compliant, but our marketing site, we still need to do a few things before May 25th, which I think is the date. Where we need to have, like, we have tracking pixels that we're using that we need to prompt people about. But the general kind of gist of it is that we're called a processor, not a controller, meaning that we don't actually store any data on our end. We're just passing it back and forth between their web browser and their email marketing app or CRM. So we're not actually holding any sensitive data. Therefore, that's what made it easy for us because we're not controlling any data. We're just processing it. It's like saying, you know, it's probably a bad example, but it's like, you know, your content management system, GDPR, you know, compliant. But if the content management, like the CMS doesn't actually know anything about the people viewing, it might embed tracking scripts, but it's not actually the role of, say, WordPress to do anything with the fact that you included the, you know, the drip or whatever tracking script on your site, right? So we're officially a processor, meaning we don't actually, we don't hold any of the data. And that makes it so our customers need to make sure that the things they integrate with, like Infusionsoft or ConvertKit or whoever, are GDPR compliant. But we're just kind of like a middleman, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes life easier for you, definitely. How about, so you become that third party that can or cannot be installed without consent. So the your users still need to care, like how
Correct.
To inform
Yes.
users about using your service.
Exactly. And that's what we're producing now, is we're producing a lot of material on exactly that, on how to do that correctly, how to do it right. But when it comes to the code base, there's nothing we need to change. We just need to change things in terms of helping our, you know, customers who have, Europeans in their audience, how to make sure that they're doing things right.
Can you give us a few hints about that, or is it still in the works?
It's still in the works, but I can give you some ideas that we're starting to talk about.
That would be lovely.
Yeah. So a big thing is just saying, like we don't have an opt-in tool or anything like that, but we can say, show this opt-in from Opt-in Monster or from ConvertKit or whatever, if they are anonymous. So it's just a matter of saying, well, if you use ConvertKit, they actually just pushed out today a big thing that makes it really easy for their customers to be compliant, where they'll put the checkbox in automatically if they are, if it's a European visitor. But for other services, if you just build your own opt-in form, we'll tell them, you know, what you should be doing is you should have a checkbox with a link to, you know, some, you know, whether it's terms of service or whatever the thing. Again, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know exactly what we're going to put yet. But more or less what we're going to do is we're going to help them better understand things like putting in their privacy policy, things like what we have currently. If you go to rightmessage.com/privacy, we put very bluntly that when you're on our website, we do track what pages you go to. And by doing that, we're able to better surface content to you. But we're not actually tracking if you're anonymous. We have no idea who you are. We just know that you came from a certain site or that you viewed our pricing page or something like that. So we've included that in our privacy policy, but we need to make sure that our customers are doing the same.
Yeah, that's a big topic for many businesses, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back to personalization, you've written a ton on that, and you probably have other resources that you can recommend to our listeners so that they can get up to speed on the topic in addition to what you told us today.
Sure. So the there's the one that's probably the biggest article I've done yet was on Growth Lab, which is Ramit Sethi's website or one of his websites. And if you just Google like Growth Lab, Brendan Dunn, you'll find it. But that's a 6,000 word article, I think, that's all about different ways that you can do this with or without a tool like RightMessage. I mean, my goal with that article was saying, given the software you already have right now, what could you do to make your, you know, the emails you send, your website and all that more personal to people? The idea being, if it's more personal, it's going to be more relatable. If it's more relatable, they're more likely to think this actually can help me. And if they think that, then they're more likely to buy. So Growth Lab, that's probably the magnum opus at this point of in terms of the biggest thing that I've done. I did one recently on Barometric site that's focused on SaaS. So different things that SaaS companies can do to make their marketing more personal. And we also have a thing called the Personalization Masterclass, which is a what it is it's a 10-lesson video course that we put together that's all about how to develop customer personas, how to turn these personas into actual segments, how to automatically put people in these segments. Because that's a big concern people have is they don't know where to start. A lot of people don't actually do any segmentation at all. I mean, they might segment around customer versus non-customer, but outside of that, they don't do much. So we're trying to build up a lot of material right now on how to segment people automatically. So, you know, how do you figure out if people are designers or developers or whatever else, along with what do you do once you have that segment data? So how do you think through, well, if this is a designer's looking at my website, what should I do differently? So we're building a lot of training. So we have that course that's available now. But the, you know, in terms of free content, we have, we're doing a lot of guest posts and a lot of content on our own site. And if you go to rightmessage.com/learn, we just have a lot of content that we've been producing on different strategies, different ideas, and obviously also documentation on how to use our software. But there's a lot in there on just how to think through this stuff in general.
So if there were three simple steps that a person, any person out there could do to start personalizing their website, what would that be?
Easiest. So the things I would do immediately would be if you have a linear sales funnel, meaning anonymous people become leads by opting into something. And then those leads might buy product A, and then people who buy product A buy product B. I would make it so if you do have the typical kind of end of blog or somewhere on your blog, whether it's a pop-up or a call to action or whatever else, make it so depending on what stage somebody's at, change that. So if they're anonymous, keep what you have now. If they're a subscriber, point them to product A. If they bought product A, point them to product B. You'll see an immediate improvement just by doing that, especially if you're sending your list back to your website, as you create more content. So that's one thing I would do. The other thing would be to go through your Google Analytics, look at two things. Who sends you traffic and what pages are they sending you traffic to? And then what are your top landing pages? So, you know, just filter down to just organic traffic, look at your landing pages, see where people are going to. And you can look at Search Console to do the same thing too. But I would do things like set up some basic things that if they, you know, depending on, say, there's three major articles that get a lot of Google traffic consistently. Well, what can you tell about somebody based off that? So if they land on this article, what can you tell about them? Like maybe, like I have that Start a Freelancing Business article. I automatically put them into a segment of they're starting out, right? So when they see a call to action on my site, it's going to be focused on starting and growing a new freelancing business. Whereas somebody who lands on an agency article is going to be seeing things on how to scale your agency. So that's, you know, I'd look at that and also look at the inbound refers. So, you know, where are people coming from and so on. But that all takes, I mean, to be honest, if you don't use a software product like a Write Message, it takes some development time. So another probably easier thing to do, and this doesn't require anything, would be say you have you're launching a product or something like that to your list and you have a sales page. I would try to find a way to maybe email your list with a survey or maybe like trigger links that let them self-segment themselves. So, you know, give them three links to say which one is best represents you. So I haven't started yet. I'm just starting out, or I'm growing and scaling my business. So they click, like, say, I'm just starting out. And then when you eventually email them a link to buy your product, just clone your sales page three times. And then, you know, sales page A can be for people starting out and make it so the headline and maybe some of the copy is about starting out. And then for sales page B, make it about people who are already up and running. And then sales page C would be people who want to grow it and are already doing well. And just find ways of saying, how is my product, you know, in this case, going to help people differently if they're starting out versus if they are looking to scale? And that doesn't require any software or any changes to your site outside of just cloning your sales page and then making it so you have a way of, you know, through trigger links or a survey you send them or something like that, to classify them into one of those three different segments.
Great. That's very, very nice of you to give advice that doesn't even employ your own software.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's how we started. I mean, you know, that's the easy way to do it. The only downside is if you want to, like, the Double Your Freelancing Rate sales page has 9 different data points it collects, right? And there are 81 possible combinations of that page.
Yeah.
So that would be a little untenable. But I've been able to increase sales in that funnel by 70% doing that. So it's been worth it for me. But yeah, it's just a matter of thinking. I mean, if you're already all in on a certain niche, it probably won't help you as much. But if you have a product that can help a few core types of people and you're trying to have a sales page and a pitch sequence that says the same thing to all of them, without any doubt, you're losing out on sales because people are needing to think, okay, so this is kind of generally speaking to all of us, but can, you know, he or she really help me? And if they doubt that at all, then they're going to, they're not going to buy.
Yep. Just to double check, as I understand, unlike A/B testing, personalization doesn't require, you know, statistically significant size of your audience.
Correct. Right.
You can get good results if you're selling something, especially if it's expensive, even with smaller audience and traffic.
Right. I mean, the hypothesis is that, I mean, think about it this way. If you were selling predominantly over the phone or in person, would you say the same thing to everyone? And the answer is no. You would change depending on, you know, who is this person, how are they acting, and so on. So generally speaking, more specific, more positioned, more niched copy and messaging always outperforms general. So if somebody is a UI designer who is looking to raise her rates and she's a freelancer, then speaking a little more directly to her, using language that is about UI and UX stuff, and showing how your product can help her is going to be better than the, hey, this is a general course on pricing for freelancers. I mean, that's always going to, you know, that first option is always going to do better.
Yep. Thank you, Brennan, for sharing your wisdom today. It was really very helpful. And I think you turned a lot of our listeners who were kind of agnostic about personalization into those who want to try it out because it's obviously effective.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, again, it's kind of that middle ground between when you're selling in person or over the phone, it's very personal, right? Like when I talk to you, when we jump on a Skype call, I know who you are. I know your background. I know what you're up to. And it's, you know, the conversation's going to be personal. Whereas a website is typically static. It's a monologue. It's saying the same thing to everyone. And this kind of gives you that middle ground, which, you know, is a good thing. So yeah, Jane, thanks so much for having me. Hopefully this has been helpful for your listeners.
To recap, my regular question is where can people find you online? So to make sure people remember where Write Message is.
Yeah, you can go to writemessage.com/UIbreakfast if you want to see personalization in action.
Oh, great.
but that's not up yet, but it will be by the time this goes live. But yeah, you can writemessage.com/UIbreakfast, or if you just want to go to writemessage.com, that too. Or you can say hi to me on Twitter. I'm Brennan Dunn, BRENNANDUNN.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Brennan, once again, and I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, thank you, Jane.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.